Yes, indeed, Rosanna has gone away, but maybe Toto's keyboard player Steve Porcaro should have taken a long, hard look at himself before getting all sentimental about his failed relationship with Rosanna Arquette. Looking at Toto photos from 1982, it's hard to work out what she saw in him at all, although, of course, this was the 80s when the rule book pretty much went out of the window. And today, the rule book of radio will be flung out of the window before I let myself out of the studio, wander down the road, pick it up and bring it back again. My name's Rodri Marsden, and this is Time Wasting, the radio show that doesn't give a hoot about public opinion until someone tells me that they don't like it, at which point I immediately change the format. Never let it be said that we don't listen to you, dear listeners. My postbag has been bulging over the past 3 weeks, although that's mainly down to pointless mail shots from Atlantic Power, into whose capable hands I've transferred my domestic energy requirements. I know you didn't tune in to hear about gas and electricity, but suffice to say they gave a very competitive quote based on monthly direct debit, so if you'd like their details, email me on radio@timewasting.net. But now to the matter in hand. Today's show will feature records from Simon Bookish, the Scaramanga Six, Yabblecon, and many more. And then, as an added incentive to keep you listening throughout the full 90-minute fiasco, we'll have live in the studio the potty-mouthed singer and songwriter B.R. Wallers from the Country Teasers, also known as The Rebel. In 10 minutes or so, we'll be playing the award-winning argument-based feature called Prove Me Wrong, in which Paul Carney from the Guided Missile record label will have the unenviable task of defending Paul McCartney's post-Beatles combo Wings. Sport and politics will be deftly handled by Steve Graziak and Andrew Ward, respectively, and a strange calm will flow throughout the studio when Neil Scott delivers his thought for the week. So here's an interesting question. Had the dear departed John Peel's enthusiasm for Hebden Bridge's finest band, Bogshed, been matched by the general public, it's very likely that today's chart would reverberate to post-Beefheartian yelping and discordant guitars. Sadly, the public prefer the wedding present. But let's hear right now how wrong that public were. The finest band you ever did hear, ladies and gentlemen, it's Bogshed.
Hey!
That was the mighty Bogshed from their particularly mighty 1986 album Step On It Bogshed, the follow-up to 1985's EP Let Them Eat Bogshed. Not since the Monkees shouted hey hey with the Monkees of a band been quite so keen to remind us of what their name is, which is odd really, as who would ever forget the name Bogshed? Not me, certainly. In stark contrast to Bogshed, I spent Wednesday evening this week watching the Everly Brothers at the Hammersmith Apollo, which has been renamed the Carling Apollo in tribute to the most best-selling of wheat lagers, Carling Black Label, which they sell in the venue for a very reasonable £16.50 a pint. This outing was a birthday treat for my father, who fondly remembered the song Wake Up Little Susie from when he was a teenager. Fortunately, the Everly Brothers also remembered the song Wake Up Little Susie from when they were teenagers and gave pretty much a faultless performance. I can't extend my compliments to the Carling Apollo, however. For a start, the ticket price, already a wallet-busting £50 per person, was inflated by £4.95 per ticket for a disconcertingly vague service charge, before being increased yet further for the privilege of actually having the tickets posted out to me. I booked the tickets via the internet, and at no point did any human assist me with my purchase. So to take three people on a birthday treat to see the Everly Brothers ended up costing a not inconsiderable £166.80, and that's before food and transport have been taken into account. My father, already bristling at the cost of being entertained in the 21st century, refused the offer of a taxi home, recalling how he had spent the Saturday nights of his youth at Barrow-in-Furness Hippodrome. "Pint chips beforehand, music, dancing and bus fare home for less than a shilling," he said. "You have to remember," I replied, recalling my A-level economics textbook, "that low levels of inflation are beneficial to the economy, greasing the wheels of commerce. Price stability can be very destructive," I added wisely. "Shut up," he replied. I've also got a problem with Carling Apollo's ticketing system. These £50 seats placed us in the circle of the venue, up in the gods and within squinting distance of the stage. About 10 minutes before the show started, the circle had approximately 800 empty seats, with about 200 people packed in tightly right at the back, including us, about as far away from the stage as possible. "This is bloody ridiculous," said my dad, who, in case you hadn't twigged from my pathetic accent, is from Lancashire. And in case you don't have a tape measure, is 6'6" tall. "This is a man who needs to stretch out, not be bound in on all sides by people munching on Werther's Originals and complaining about being such a long way from the action." At this point, a slim blonde lady walked up the aisle towards an elderly couple sitting in front of us. "Excuse me," she said, "I think you're sitting in our seats." Behind her were empty seats stretching as far as the eye could see, and I started to giggle. "Yeah," she continued, "we're in W46 and W47 right here." The elderly couple started gathering their things together. "For God's sake," I said in a rare moment of public confrontation. "There are nearly 1,000 better seats to choose from. Why on earth do you want to sit here?" She sheepishly walked away and sat in a row all to herself while we sat there wedged together. "This is bloody ridiculous," says my dad again, and got up. We followed him down to row D, where we spread out and lounged around as if we were in our own living room. As the lights went down and Don and Phil strode on stage, we looked behind us. Everyone was still sitting on their specially assigned seats. They didn't dare move. But slowly, they began to take courage, and by the end of the performance, we were all spaced evenly around the auditorium, in a perfect example of Brownian motion. So the moral of this story, if there is one, is that if you do end up going to a concert at the Carling Apollo, remember that they fill the venue from the back to the front, so try and wait until the very last minute before buying your ticket. Let's hear from the band that I probably would have gone to see if I hadn't been at the Carling Apollo watching the Everly Brothers. Actually, in retrospect, I could have quite easily gone from the Everly Brothers show, which finished at about 9:30, and got to Camden in plenty of time. But as often happens, it's only after the event that these realisations dawn upon you. Anyway, here's a band I didn't see on Wednesday night. It's the Scaramanga Six.
I've brought you all here today. There's something special that I want to say.
That was the, and indeed still is, the Scaramanga Six. In true Thompson Twins style, there aren't six of them, but you can't blame them wanting to keep their alliterative name. The Furious Five and the Fantastic Four have already been taken, of course, in any case. That song was called Ladies and Gentlemen, from their debut album, Strike Up the Band. Their new one, which is much more raucous, possibly too raucous for this show, would you believe, is called Cabin Fever, and I understand that it's out now on Wrath Records. Right, during this slot called Prove Me Wrong, I challenge the great, the good and the pretty average to get up early and come to central London to try and persuade me that music that I don't like very much is actually worthy of my attention. For the previous 2 weeks, we've leaned towards cutting-edge musical styles, extreme sounds that set my teeth on edge before rather rudely setting my teeth on fire. But this week, we're going about as far from the cutting edge as it's possible to go by considering, in depth, the music of Paul McCartney's 70s combo, Wings. The man who is incredibly quite happy to come on a popular radio show like this one and label himself as a Wings fanatic is the man behind the guided missile imprint, Paul Carney. Hello, Paul, and welcome to the show this afternoon.
Hello.
How are
you? Did I tell you about the Everly Brothers tribute band from Liverpool?
No, I know. I haven't heard about them.
They're called the Netherly Brothers.
Netherly Brothers?
They're from the Netherly district of Liverpool.
Well, that requires me to have some knowledge of the geography of Merseyside, of course, which I don't have.
You already know my best Liverpool tribute band gag anyway.
No.
The Sisters of Mersey.
Sisters of Mersey. Have you formed that band yet?
No.
I had a nasty encounter with some goths on route to the show, actually, but that's I'll save that for next week when I'm struggling for things to write about. Anyway, Paul, Wings. Mm-hmm. To me, Wings means Mull of Kintyre. Mm-hmm. It means Live and Let Die, which some people are fond of, but I personally think is dreadful.
Loser, carry on.
But that's all. I mean, I'm not that familiar. I mean, I am someone who's familiar with 70s rock. Yeah, I'm very fond of 70s rock, but Wings is not something that I've ever investigated. So maybe you could put me straight.
Well, as you know, Roger, it was me that turned you on to Steely Dan.
That's very true.
So I'm going to do a similar job on you today with the Mighty Wings. Do you remember on that Alan Partridge where... Alan Partridge was talking about Wings, and the Geordie fella says, "Wings, who were they?" And he says, "Oh, only the band that the Beatles could have been."
Yeah, I do remember that.
You know, very true. Like, you know, at the end of the Beatles' career, it was John Lennon who got fed up, and McCartney wanted to just take it back to being a little rock and roll band playing in little venues. And Lennon, you know, the working class hero, was not happy with that. So
are you telling me that Wings' early stuff is kind of more gritty and or not?
Well, if you listen to a lot of the Wings and McCartney stuff, it's a lot more it's a lot more along the lines of the best Beatles stuff. Whereas you know, Lennon kind of went in a different way. Everyone who thinks that McCartney's stuff was all just kind of slushy love songs, I'd advise them to go buy a copy of Double Fantasy.
That's not an erotic magazine, I take it?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Girls in little round spectacles.
I don't know where you're going with that, but I'll stop
gone.
You. Whatever. Yeah. Fine. Okay. So maybe you should start me off with a particular track. What have you brought? In fact, is it lined up, Jamie? Do we have the Wings?
What one have you got lined up, Jay?
It's Let 'Em In.
McCartney wrote this. He was originally going to give it to Ringo Starr, and then he went, "Nah, it's too good." And I've been in two bands who independently have both said to me, "Oh, let's do a version of Let 'Em In." In fact, one was The Rebel.
Who's downstairs at the moment tuning up?
As a member of The Beal. The Beal were always going to do Let 'Em In, and now Cash Machine want to do it, and, you know.
But none of them have actually got around to doing it.
No, it's the Ringo Starr syndrome.
Right, okay. Yes, shall we hear it? Is it ready,
on.
Jamie? Let's stick it on. Paul, you were telling me that...
Sorry, I'm tapping.
That's all right. You were saying that you have this song as your doorbell.
Yeah, we bought a doorbell from... I won't name the shop.
Well, you know, it's all right.
And, you could record a record onto it. And so we've had this record on there.
That's nice. Did you persistently let people in after you?
No one ever came round. Didn't tell anyone where we lived.
You just used to take it in turns to go out and give it a ring and then exactly. Come back again.
But when McCartney done it, it was all the people he mentions are all his relatives. He's got like loads of relatives because he's a Catholic.
Right. He doesn't mention their surnames. He doesn't say Linda McCartney,
Sister Susie, Auntie Jin
McCartney. That would get slightly tedious.
But do you notice that song worked there because the rebel came in? He knocked on the door and opened the door and let him in.
The listeners wouldn't have been aware of that, of course, but he did do that.
The magic of radio.
Why is McCartney saying dough? Knocking at the dough? Is that
it's not dough, it's dough.
I see. All right.
It's well, like, you know, big bopper.
Let's just have a few more seconds of this. Okay.
Let's
have Here we go. Let them in. Wings. There we go, nice backing there. So, Paul, is there any sense in which your appreciation of the work of Wings is down to the fact that kind of a Liverpool Merseyside solidarity?
No, I remain unbiased.
Are there any bands from Liverpool who you despise? Can you name even one to just kind of at least prove that what you're saying is not complete rubbish?
I don't know.
Icicle Works, were they from Liverpool?
Yeah, I like a lot of them, actually, to be honest.
The Liverpool wimp pop scene, you were into China Crisis as well?
Yeah.
Man alive.
Yeah, I'm well into them. I had a drink with Eddie from China Crisis. I haven't got a story that goes with that.
Is
this Kenny Loggins?
It is Loggins, yeah. My friend Neil says that China Crisis were the loudest band he ever saw.
Really?
Which is kind of extraordinary. Anyway, look, we're getting off the point.
Aye.
A consistent member of Wings throughout their career was a man called Denny Lane. Mm-hmm. Don't you find that amusing?
What, you mean because of Penny Lane?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? His wife was called Penny.
Really?
No.
Oh, no. Don't do that to me. I did a little bit of research before this. Wings had a disastrous Japanese tour which finished them off at the end. Did you know about that?
I haven't got that far in the book yet.
Oh, there is a book?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to read it to so I could come and baffle you with a load of facts about Wings.
Right.
And then I just sorry.
Yeah, fine. Okay. What's the second track we're gonna hear? And maybe tell us a bit about it and what it means to you.
Okay.
As a man.
As a man. Well, as a human.
Yeah.
Can I just say actually something about, I asked Ben earlier what, you know, I told him I was doing this section of the show, and he told me that Wings Greatest is one of the, you know, the best ofs, you know, to be held up as an example of a best of, and that actually it should be called England's Greatest.
Well, am I missing the reference there?
It's the greatest music to come from
England. Oh, England's Greatest. Yeah. He truly believes that.
Yeah, don't you? Have I not convinced you yet?
Well, no, not yet. But then I have only heard Let Them In, Let Them In, which, to be honest, I did already know.
Yeah, well, this, you know, the simplicity of that track is its genius. But this one is a little bit more, you'll like this, Roger, because it's a bit quirky.
Right, okay.
Okay? Like all that stuff, don't you? Like Stump. How much is the fish?
Okay, all right.
So this one is called Uncle Albert Stroke Admiral Halsey.
Okay,
well, you don't pronounce the stroke.
Okay, let's hear this, and maybe we'll fade it down, and I can give you my opinion during it. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. We're so sorry if we caused you any pain. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. There's no one left at home, and I believe I'm gonna wait.
so sorry, but we haven't heard a thing all day. We're so sorry, Uncle Albert. But if anything should happen, we'll be sure to give a ring.
Everyone in the studio is going purely to copy Paul McCartney. You tell me that this song is in three parts, Paul. Uh-huh. Have we reached the second bit yet?
No, this is part one.
To tell you the truth, that's part of my problem with Live and Let Die, is just that kind of, you know, one bit after one bit after one bit juxtaposed really messily. It's just there's no flow to it, you know. But you like that. You like your music composed, you know, like suites of music, yeah?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I don't agree with you. I think there's all that orchestral stabs and that. The reggae bit in the middle that was Linda's idea.
Well, is it coming up, the reggae bit?
She was
bit?
Into reggae. No, in the
Oh, Live and
Let
Die. Sorry. I'm just looking like a fool now.
There is a change coming up here. Hang on.
Okay, here we go. Hang on.
Yeah, go ahead. Here's a little chorus bit.
It's a good way to listen to music, isn't it? Just Wings with audio commentary by Paul Carney. We should do it. You should do a special DVD release of it. Yeah,
that would be good. Wings and Things.
Okay, let's just have this for another 30 seconds and try and enjoy it. Here we go. Okay, well, that was kind of a bit silly, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah, it was like the Bonzo Dog Band or something like that.
You were laughing a great deal throughout of that. What was the bit about the pie?
Butter pie. The butter wouldn't melt, so I put it in the pie. All right.
That's excellent.
You know, you're into cookery. Roger has always got the cookery channel on.
That's
in his house.
That's
always.
That's very true.
He's cooking, man.
Very, very true. Paul, is there a particular Wings album that stands head and shoulders above any of the others?
I would say Wingspan, the best of Wings.
that's a very Alan Partridge answer you've just given there. You know.
No, it is, though, to be honest, it is. It's like Queen, you know, the greatest hits is the best one. I mean, Band on the Run is obviously the definitive album.
Okay.
That's the one you should go out and buy tomorrow.
Okay, and put it in the pie all right.
yeah,
okay.
If the butter won't melt.
Of course. Paul, you're obviously a very talented man. You do a great deal of good work in the community.
I do.
London musical community. What are you currently involved with? Would you like to fill us in, perhaps?
Currently, I'm involved with a band called Cash Machine.
Okay, and we're going to hear from them in just a second. A brand new recording produced by the drummer of Franz Ferdinand.
That's right, yes. Paul Thompson, and engineered by Scissor Kicks. Another legend.
Yes,
of music.
Anthony Chapman indeed, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm also in a band called The Beak, which is a spin-off of The Beal. Well, it's just a couple of people out of The Beal. And I think I'm playing the drums, but I don't know yet. We've got a gig in 2 weeks.
As is often the way.
We've got to decide who's playing what and write 6 songs in 2 weeks.
Shouldn't be too difficult. This is a recurring theme with your bands, I understand.
Yeah, get the name, get the gig.
Get the concept. Have you made this huge mechanical beak that's going to open and close on stage?
If any of the listeners have got a big mechanical beak that they don't want, maybe an unwanted gift, send it. Just put the beak Just attach it to the beak.
The beak, comma London, and it should arrive at its destination.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have your karaoke project coming up next year as well.
Yes, next year is Alka Pop Idol, being launched, we think, on March 11th at the Buffalo Bar, which incidentally is where the beak gig is.
Okay.
On the 10th of December.
Very good.
Alka Pop Idol in March, yeah. It's karaoke, but with a band. Simple as that.
That's crazy. And we do it'll, all sorts it'll never
of
stuff. Work.
Everything from Toto...
To
you know,
Toto.
Right through to Madonna...
Wow.
You know, a fan. We might even do that.
Okay.
Get your pom-poms out.
Okay. I'll take that advice. We're about to hear a track by Cash Machine, newly recorded as recently as 2 weeks ago. And the track is called Lorraine, I believe. Do you know what this is about at all?
No.
Not really. It doesn't really matter, does it?
It's brilliant.
Okay, well, let's...
Go out and buy it on Picture Disc when we get a record label.
Fine. Let's fade down the sounds of Glamour Profession by Steely Dan, and here are Cash Machine. Wrong track, actually.
You're so John Peel.
I know. Which one is it?
On purpose.
Oh, there we go. Here we go. Let's try again.
You got a big head, sour puss.
You take away my place. You take away my face. Airtight breath back with your crap. You're like a letdown day. Wet jeans.
You got chicken legs.
Bring back the dead. You bring back the dead. Airtight breath back with your crap. You're like a bad cold, bad breath.
You've got good hair for a dog.
You take away my place, you take away my face, airtight breath back with your crap. You're like a cheat in the team, plain mean.
You've got a big nose, Concord.
Dead.
Paul, thank you very much for coming in this afternoon.
Pleasure.
That was Cash Machine with Lorraine. You wanted to add something about the similarity between Cash Machine and Wings.
No, actually, it was the Beak. I've took McCartney's influence and taught my girlfriend how to play the keyboards,
so fantastic.
She could be in the band.
I hope she's going to be as good
Hi, Michelle!
I hope she's going to be as good a singer as Linda.
Thanks.
No worries. It seems hard to imagine that anything happened during the previous 7 days in sport apart from the great footballer George Best finally conking out on us during Friday afternoon. As a fervent Man United supporter, I'm sure that our sporting expert Steve Graziak will have a few words to say about the boozing philanderer. But if I know Steve, and to be honest, I don't know him particularly well, he'll roll up a bit of basketball and table tennis news in there too to give us a well-rounded overall perspective. Steve, take it away.
During a match between West Brom and Manchester United many years ago, West Brom defender Graham Williams asked George Best if he could stay still for a minute. When Best asked him why, Williams replied, "So I can see your face. Because all I've seen of you all day is your backside disappearing down the touchline." You weren't the only one, Graham. Rest in peace, George. The biggest shock of the week in football was surprisingly not the news that Peter Crouch failed to score again, but rather the news that injury-riddled Manchester United striker Luis Saha appeared on a football pitch for more than 5 minutes without going off injured. Saha, who has had more injuries than in a year's worth of casualty script, may move away from Old Trafford during the transfer window, with Marseille believed to be interested in his signature. He'd better make sure it's a lightweight pen. In darts, the Darts Regulation Authority this week reached an agreement with UK Sport to adopt anti-doping measures within the sport, with random drug tests set to take place in all major tournaments from the start of next year. I'm guessing obtaining a sample from these guys won't be too difficult. Just don't leave them near the Bunsen burners in the lab is all I say. Meanwhile, England's cricketers narrowly avoided another embarrassing defeat during the week in the second test match against Pakistan. In a match that was packed full of incident and controversy, yes, I am still talking about cricket, play was halted for several minutes at one point after a gas cylinder that was powering a drinks cabinet on the boundary edge exploded. Fortunately, nobody was seriously injured in the blast, although ex-Australian batsman David Boone, who was allegedly in the ground watching the match, was seen desperately trying to glue cans of drink back together until somebody told him that there's no actual alcohol in Pakistan. In the least likely piece of movie casting, since Keanu Reeves was casting, well, anything really, Stan, more clubs than Soho's Collymore, has unbelievably landed a part in the upcoming Basic Instinct sequel. Collymore has apparently said that he hopes the role will provide him his big acting breakthrough and that he didn't want to star in a football movie, as they're usually rubbish. He's quite right, of course, but then surely he would have been perfect in them. Mind you, he couldn't have been much worse than when, in Escape to Victory, Sylvester Stallone took up a role pretending to be a goalkeeper, a role that he's believed to have had a profound effect on Jerzy Dudek's career. Now, in tennis, now this goes back to something we were talking about last week, and I suppose we could mark this down as us a hex on a sports person by talking about them the week before. Roger Federer actually lost the tournament during the week. And it was
you're kidding.
He did, yes. It was an extraordinary one because he was playing against David Nalbandian and actually won the first two sets. And everybody was just expecting the usual trouncing. And to everybody's amazement, Nalbandian actually managed to somehow win the match. He won the last three sets in a row, which I believe is the first time that anyone's won three sets in a row against Federer for like 6 years or something like that.
He was probably trying to offset the failure of his countrymen to beat us at football the other week, perhaps.
Well, apparently he came back to Argentina to a hero's welcome and what have you, even though it wasn't a Grand Slam tournament or anything. But you can quite understand it, really, can't you?
I wonder what a hero's welcome actually consists of. I mean, it's not something I've ever been subject objected to, but was he carried shoulder high through the streets of Buenos Aires, or?
Well, I'm not sure of the exact details. I mean, I've always imagined the hero's welcome to involve, like, you know, carried on shoulders and, like, open-top buses and ticker tape parades and stuff like that, although, you know, that might seem a bit excessive for a tennis tournament that wasn't even, like, Wimbledon or anything like that.
Well, no, so. Indeed. Going back to George Best, Steve, obviously you'll be quite upset at his passing, but one thing I was astonished by when I was reading the obits, as they're known, was that he actually signed for Dunstable Town at one point, which is my hometown, a very, very small town in Bedfordshire. In the mid-70s, he wasn't even over the hill at the time, but he appeared to have been playing for a small Bedfordshire league side, which I was astounded by.
Yeah, he had a very, very long list of clubs during his career. I mean, he sort of officially retired from the game when he left Manchester United, but after that he went on and played Fulham in two spells. But yeah, his list of clubs is actually extraordinary, because he also did sign for Hibs twice. He played for a team in Tokyo, I think, he also at some point. He also famously played in the US Soccer League. But I know, I didn't know he played for Dunstable Town, but I'm sure they have quite a big kind of tribute to him if they're playing.
Well, I imagine it's the only interesting thing that ever happened to Dunstable. I believe they're floundering as we speak in their particular league, whatever that might be. The only other thing I noticed this week, Steve, was in the World Gymnastic Championships. I don't know whether you've been following.
Yes, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah. Sadly, one of our competitors, British competitors, Beth Tweddle, failed to get a medal, which is obviously rude by the tabloid headline writers, because that would have been Tweddle gets medal would have been a fantastic back page splash, if you ask me.
Of course, and having failed, they can go for what a load of old Tweddle and stuff like that, can't you, really? Yeah. I do follow gymnastics when the Olympics is on. I think, like everybody does, because gymnastics to me is just an extraordinary collection of sports, really, because it's basically televised messing around in a gym, really, isn't it? I mean, you know, you've got people hanging off bars and swinging around rings and
dancing around
the air and faffing around with a bit of ribbon and chucking things up in the air, and it's just been absolutely extraordinary. It's like watching televised PE, really, isn't it?
Excellent. Well, on that note, having slagged off one of the main events in the Olympic Games, it's time to say goodbye. So thanks for ringing in, Steve, and I'll speak to you next week.
I'll speak to you then, Rodri. Bye.
Cheers.
And now, what better time to hear something from that exquisite land of plenty, land of beer, and land of deep-fried cheese, the Czech Republic. This is Jablkon. Before the exquisite jingle was the playful acoustic sound of Yabblecon from their album Baba Aga. I've no idea what they look like, but I imagine they might have beards, and if anyone could confirm this, I'd be most grateful. Now it's time for a fresh-faced man who is unlikely ever to grow a half-decent beard at all. His name is Neil Scott, and this is his persistently fascinating Thought for the Week.
Earlier this week, after I'd got on the wrong train, I found myself in the bleak Glaswegian estate of Drumchapel. Glasgow, as you may know, is the murder capital of Europe. It's in places like this where most of those murders are committed. The question is, why? Shortly after exiting Drumchapel station, I had an urge to micturate. However, as there are no public toilets, I carried on walking. Soon enough, I felt a desire to urinate, but there were no cafes or pubs. Not long after, I needed to wee, but there were no bushes or parks. Then I needed a slash, and without offending public decency, relieved myself behind a line of garages. What I had learned was that these estates are singularly lacking in communal spaces, open spaces, hidden places, and public amenities. Every inch of ground has been manipulated by man. Nature barely exists here, and so neither does imagination. How can you see the stars when you are intimidated by tower blocks? To empathise with other people requires imagination, and in these high-density housing projects, imagination is in short supply.
Neil Scott there recorded under very little pressure at his home in Glasgow a couple of days ago. You can't force out wisdom like that. You have to allow it to come naturally at a gentle pace. And I hope Neil appreciates my indulgent nurturing of his intellect over the past 3 weeks. Right, an exciting moment for me as we welcome to the studio Ben Wallers, chanteur of the Country Teasers and as a solo artiste known across London and indeed the world as the Rebel. Ben, can you hear me?
Yes,
you're very, very faint there. I understand you'd rather devote any chatting time to playing music, and I can hardly blame you, to be honest, as my interviewing technique is particularly poor. So we can rush through this section if you like. I understand you've been to America recently.
Yes.
Any funny stories you'd like to tell us about?
No.
Who's down there with you today?
Sophie Petrovic, the drummer.
Excellent. So there's two of you. And what's the first song?
It's called Pest Wood.
Ben, take it away. Thank you.
Pakistan, 2-0.
The Rebel there with a live version of Pest Wood from the Vine album Prawns, available from junioraspirin.com. Typically marvellous output there. Ben and Sophie will be rejoining us in 15 minutes or so for two more highly polished musical vignettes. When I get home later this afternoon, I'll be welcoming into my home a new flatmate. Emma hails from Northampton. She has recently got herself a job in London and needed somewhere cheap and comfortable to live. She heard that it would be fairly cheap and reasonably comfortable to live with me, so she'll be on her way down the M1 with her mum and dad as we speak. Her mum and dad won't be moving in too, of course. They're just helping out lifting things up the stairs. Anyway, at moments like this, I think back over all the people I've lived with over the years and the highlights of my domestic life. For example, in May 1991, Catherine Nelson caught me playing air guitar in the hallway of our flat in St Charles Square, London, West 10. Then in December 1991, I grabbed Clive Gabriel by the scruff of the neck and slammed him up against a supporting wall when he taunted me for the 100th time about not doing the washing up at our house in Burmester Road, London, Southwest 17. In April 93, I had a blazing row with a girl called Vicky because I stole one of her Dairy Lee cheese triangles from the fridge in our flat on Newington Green Road, London North 1. I offered to replace the cheese triangle. That's not the point, she said. But she was wrong. It was the point. In November 2001, I realise I've missed out 8 years, but not much of interest really happened there. I lived with a girl called Cora, who went out with the son of Professionals actor Martin Shaw. They spent the afternoons watching episodes of The Professionals, starring Martin Shaw, which I found somewhat creepy. In May 2004, fellow Resonance FM presenter David McCandless arrived home and said, "Oh, by the way, if you hear strange noises from my room this evening, it's because I've got hold of a load of nitrous oxide, and I'm going to stay in and try it out." Then in September 2004, Paul Carney, who is sitting downstairs from the studio here right now, tried to liven up my birthday celebrations. "Shall we have a gin Bowen?" he said. "What's that?" I replied. "I don't know," he said. "Maybe it's some gin with a Bowen." That joke works much better written down than read out loud. Which brings me up to the present day. Yesterday was spent cleaning and tidying the flat in order to make it habitable. The fact that there's a girl moving in, rather than a boy, somehow spurs me on to make an effort to get things completely spick and fantastically span. In the process of this domestic upgrade, I installed in my bathroom a soap dispenser. I've never had a soap dispenser before. It's shiny and metal, and when I invert it, liquid soap emerges in a steady stream onto my upturned hand. The particular liquid soap that I'm using right now is from Marseille, and it's called Ylang Ylang. I'd never heard of Ylang Ylang until fairly recently, when a television advert for Herbal Essences shampoo featured a woman in the shower covered in rich suds, cavorting with pleasure and moaning the words Ylang Ylang. This vocabulary expanding moment was similar to those 1980s epiphanies of jojoba and aloe vera, which I've consistently failed to encounter in any non-cosmetic form. Anyway, since my Ylang Ylang moment, whenever I experience even the most moderate amounts of enjoyment, from food to music to even buses being on time, I find myself saying the words, "Oh, Ylang Ylang." So it seemed only right and proper to splash out on some Ylang Ylang. I discovered that Ylang Ylang is the flower of the Kananga tree. The flower is yellow or pink and yields an essential oil, which is an aphrodisiac and is apparently sebum normalising. So it turns me on and normalises my sebum? Oh, Ylang Ylang. Further research yielded the information that in Indonesia, Ylang Ylang flowers are spread on the bed of newlywed couples. To be honest, all this saucy information about Ylang Ylang has made me rethink its place in my soap dispenser. If my new flatmate's mum and dad arrive this afternoon and find Ylang Ylang in my bathroom, they'll automatically assume that I'm going to normalise their daughter's sebum before attempting to seduce her and subsequently marry her. My career prospects aren't particularly good right now, so the last thing her parents will be saying to me is, "Oh, Rodri, Ylang Ylang." So I think, on the way home, I might just pick up some Imperial Leather. I know, let's go to Brazil. Not literally, of course, but let's try and imagine ourselves right on the streets of Rio de Janeiro in about 1930. A leap of imagination is required, I understand that, but have a go at least. Carnaval de la Martina Babel.
Mulher de 70 anos, já cheia de desenganos, que usa 25 gramas de vestido na canela.
Só dando com uma pedra nela, só dando com uma pedra nela, só dando com uma pedra nela, só dando com uma pedra nela.
Menina que pede esmola, com um cofre de ferro imenso, que pede pra Santo Onofre pra levar pra São Lourenço.
Só dando uma pedra nela, só dando uma pedra nela, só dando uma pedra nela, só dando uma pedra nela.
Cantora do Instituto, que canta toda semana, ao escrever no quadro negro, artilharia rusticana.
Jogar quadro negro nela, jogar quadro negro nela, jogar quadro negro nela, jogar quadro negro nela.
Não tomo de voleibol, não tomo de basquetebol, com este meu corpinho assim, eu só tomo é leite bom. Só dando com uma pedra em mim, só dando com uma pedra em mim, só dando com uma pedra em mim, só dando com uma pedra em mim.
The sound of Mountain's Nantucket Sleigh Ride, propelling us inevitably towards Andrew Ward's rundown of This Week in Politics.
Hello again, Rodley. And this was, of course, the week in which Britain's new licensing laws came into effect, allowing clubs and bars to sell alcohol round the clock. Tony Blair's father-in-law, the actor Tony Booth, who gave up alcohol after once setting fire to himself while drunk, told the Daily Mail that the new laws were wrong, muddle-headed and terribly dangerous. But the Times reported that in Canterbury town centre on Thursday night, there were no hordes of drinkers vomiting, brawling or engaging in sexual acts. Even though the town was packed with fans of Ryan Maloney, a.k.a. Toadfish from Neighbours, who was there to turn on the Christmas lights. Despite all this excitement and the wrong, muddle-headed and terribly dangerous new laws, the only crime the Times reported was the vandalism of a Keep Left sign, for which two youths received a caution. Ryan Maloney is appearing as Buttons at Canterbury's Marlowe Theatre in their production of Cinderella, alongside a stunning international star cast, including Sheila Ferguson of the Three Degrees. Away from Canterbury, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon sensationally resigned from the Likud party in order to form a new group named National Responsibility. Opinion polls suggested that the new party would win over 30 seats in the Israeli parliament or Knesset. A spokesman said that while Mr. Sharon had always had his knockers, he also had the knack of knowing when to apply the knockout blow. Mr. Sharon is, of course, the only world leader whose surname is also a character in EastEnders, a situation which could change if American President George W. Bush, who is accused this week of threatening to bomb the Arab TV station Al Jazeera, changed his name to Wellard or Little Mo. Alternatively, the Conservatives could elect as their new leader Les Dennis, Richard E. Grant, or Tom Paulin. However, the new Tory leader is more likely to be one of the two Tory leadership hopeful Davids, David Davis and David Cameron, whose tour this week continues with a debate at Guildford Hall in Linton, Cambridgeshire. Tory leadership hopeful David Cameron said that he was seeing more of Tory leadership hopeful David Davis than he was of his own wife, and joked that maybe they should get a civil partnership. The tour continued at the Lakeside International Hotel in Frimley Green, where Mr. Cameron joked that he was seeing so much of Mr. Davis that maybe they should get a civil partnership, before reaching the Methodist Hall in Westminster, where David Cameron joked that because he and David Davis were seeing so much of each other, maybe they should get a civil partnership. When asked whether he'd form a pact with the Liberal Democrats in the event of a hung parliament, David Cameron answered that he fought to win and that he'd add Lib Dem pact to the motto that you'd try everything once except Morris dancing and incest. Rodri, have you ever tried Morris dancing?
I haven't, but we both have an acquaintance, Richard Sanderson, who does Morris dance quite vigorously, I understand, and every
very
week.
Very vigorously.
Indeed. Have you taken advantage of the new licensing laws? Were you out till midnight last night?
I've been vomiting, brawling and engaging in sexual acts non-stop. I've got cirrhosis and chlamydia already.
Fantastic. Have you been arrested?
To some extent, yeah.
Right, OK. I noted this weekend that Lord Archer has been seen reapplying to join the Conservative Party, and I wondered whether you'd ever had shepherd's pie with champagne.
Well, I'm very, very glad you asked me that, in fact. It's the Marlow Theatre, Canterbury, and the show runs from Thursday the 1st of December. Ticket prices start at £8.50.
What are you doing? I don't know. That was the strangest non sequitur I've ever heard on the radio.
I just mentioned the pantomime at the Marlow Theatre, Canterbury, and I was plugging it again for no real reason.
Yeah, I know. Just genuinely, it generally puzzles me. I mean, obviously, I'm going back now and I'm recovering old ground, but it genuinely puzzles me why anyone would want to have champagne with shepherd's pie.
Oh. I would actually, I think you're right. In fact, it's showing off, isn't it? I think with shepherd's pie, you'd want a claret or a Cabernet Sauvignon.
Isn't shepherd's pie just rubbish food, though? I don't get it. It's, to me, shepherd's pie equals school dinners. It's certainly not swank. Anyway, look, I'm dwelling on the whole shepherd's pie thing, and maybe I should.
No, I mean, I'd never considered this. I knew that he used to serve Krug and shepherd's pie, and I'd never actually drawn the fact that they were together, and I don't think they compliment each other at all.
No,
I'd go to one of his parties for the free booze. You know, should I be invited? And if he's one of your listeners, he probably is slightly bereft of friends at the moment, and I'd be willing to turn up.
Ah, Andrew, you're all heart. One other thing. Oh, hang on, sorry, wait a second. Well, I'd thank you to keep your cantankerous laughter to yourself. Yes, I did see that John Prescott describes Sir Christopher Mayer, chairman of the Press Complaints Commission, as a red-socked fop. This week, and of course, we were talking about your socks last week, and I wondered if you would in fact see that as an insult. Are you someone who sports red socks, or someone who indeed is a fop and is proud of being both?
I think foppishness is something to cultivate, frankly, and
red sockedness.
Some people are born red socked, some people achieve red sockedness, and some have it thrust upon them. I don't think that John Prescott is capable of any, and I think that's just envy speaking. I think that's a bitter man.
Andrew, thank you for ringing in today and telling us all about politics. I know a lot more about politics now than I did 5 minutes ago.
So do your listeners, by the way.
Well, hey, you know me as someone who would never forget the listeners, which is why I'm going to treat them now to the sumptuous sounds of Montana Pete.
Think! Concentrate and love! Placing you to fade in when desire is lost! We can't!
Not yet, indeed. Montana Pete there, a bombastic three-piece band from southwest London. Live, they're a total disgrace. They don't start or finish songs properly. Members of the band wander on and off stage at random. They stop to chastise each other mid-performance, and as such, they're a total inspiration. Would that more bands ruin their chances of success by behaving in this fashion. Another artiste who has a similar disregard for convention is here in the studio this afternoon. Let's welcome back The Rebel with two more songs. Mr. Wallers, take it away.
This one's called Bums on a Rock. Called Panic Holiday. Southern rapeseed. Where do those words come from and what do they mean? I wanted something nice to juxtapose with two things nasty. I find juxtaposition of that kind real tasty. Pakistan, 2-0, 2-0.
Many, many thanks to B.R. Wallers and Sophie, a.k.a. The Rebel, for coming in today. You heard their Bums on a Rock, followed by Panic Holiday. For more information about gigs and records, etc., visit therebel.co.uk. Next week's guest on the Time Wasting Radio Show is Simon Bookish, an expert in medieval recorder playing, who's decided that dressing up in 19th century military gear and singing with the passion, verve and flair of Scott Walker's errant half-brother might be a better career move. He's probably not making much money out of it, poor soul, but you can rely on him to write fantastic songs about metal horses. So here, on Resonance FM, is Simon Bookish with Metal Horse. Black and hammer and sickle. Simon Bookish there with Metal Horse. Once again, the big hand is on the five and the little hand is somewhere between the one and the two. And we know what that means. It's time to get out of the studio as quickly as possible. In the time it takes to play both halves of a Premiership football match, we've laughed, we've cried, we've wondered whether it's all worth the effort, but ultimately we've soldiered on, kept our heads held high, and made it successfully to the end. We may not have left the world in a better state than when we began, but we have had the privilege of listening to the very best of Wings, and many thanks to Paul Carney for that. And we've delighted in the deadpan majesty of The Rebel, and many thanks to them for bringing themselves in against their better judgment. Jamie the Engineer has handed me a copy of a CD called Kit, which on Hook and Crook Records, which he highly recommends and has told me to plug. Maybe it's his record label, I don't know, but there you go. Next week, as mentioned, we'll be entertained with a live session by Simon Bookish, and Shirley Lee from those resilient pop maestros Spearmint will be here trying to persuade me that Don't Stand Me Down by Dexy's Midnight Runners isn't the pointless heap of drivel that I imagine it to be. How about that for the hard sell? And to round off the show, let's hear from the Fire Engines, that riff-tastic Scottish band from the early 80s who reformed for one gig at the ICA a couple of months ago, supported by Paul Carney's Cash Machine, who we heard earlier. Paul did not tell me about the gig, so I missed seeing one of my favourite bands, and obviously I don't blame that on Paul at all. Not one little bit. Oh, and don't buy the Fire Engine's most recent release on Domino Records, because it's rubbish. Dig up the old stuff, if your wallet can handle it. Coming up next is Tom Chivers with the best in contemporary poetry. I'm Rodri Marsden. I've time wasted for long enough, so for now, goodbye and good luck.